We would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land we have recorded this podcast on, the Whadjuk people of the Noongar Nation.
We pay our respects to the elders, past and present, and extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people on the lands which Deep Herd operates.
Welcome back to the Grains Combo podcast, brought to you by the Department of Primary Industries and Regional Development in Western Australia. I'm Cindy Webster.
And I'm Jeanette Pratt, and we are research scientists based in regional WA. These episodes shine a spotlight on the knowledge and tools developed by Deep Herd to grow the grains industry.
In today's episode, I'm talking with Deep Herd research scientists Kira Beard and Greg Shea. We will be discussing the latest lupin sclerotinia research being conducted by Deep Herd and the new aussielupins.org.au website. This project is funded by the Australian Government's Agricultural Innovation Hubs program with support from Deep Herd and was initiated through the Southwest WA Drought Resilience Adoption and Innovation Hub. Welcome to the podcast, Kira and Greg.
Thanks, Cindy.
Good to be here.
Before we dive into our discussion, can you both briefly introduce yourselves and describe your roles at the department?
I'm Kira Beard and I'm based in the Geraldton office with Deep Herd, and I've been here for over 20 years and my current research is in the field of crop protection, specifically plant diseases.
And I'm Greg Shea. I'm in the Meriden office of Deep Herd, research scientist, and a lot of my career I've devoted to lupins, so various aspects of lupin production and now the use for human consumption.
Thank you both. Now, Greg, a new website called Aussie Lupins was recently launched. Can you share with us the inspirations behind it and provide some context?
Well, we just found that the average consumer has a real lack of understanding about where lupins fit as a potential part of an everyday diet. And so we thought that the most efficient and relevant way of delivering that information was to create a website. And so with this new project, which has got up and which is just finishing at the moment, which is funded by the Australian Government's Innovation Hubs program, we've put together a place where consumers can find information about lupins for food, where there's information provided in the background so they know that this information is scientifically verifiable. So some consumers might find there's claims on all sorts of foods and they'll see that on various media around the place. And that's all well and good. But we thought it was important that there was this background information. So everything has got a scientific citation to it. So people don't have to get bogged down in that detail. But if they want to find that, they want to be sure about how the lupins fit into people's diets, then it's very much a transparent process here.
And Greg, can you tell us about Deep Herd's role with this initiative?
We're part of the Drought Hubs project that, as I mentioned before, there's a federally funded project going on here. So we're partners in that. So we could apply for this funding. And so we've come in, and because we have historically been in this space, having scientists work on various aspects of lupins for food, we've pulled together that information and we've gone back to people who were working with us and put them on as consultants. So the team is back together and we've managed to put all this information in one place.
And are there any other contributors or funding partners involved in creating this website?
Well, always, if you go back 30 years, because this work was started by people who are now long in retirement, other people. And during that whole process, we've had funding from the state government and obviously GRDC during that time. So this is really a culmination of a lot of work over a lot of years. It's not just something that's just been researched in the last 12 months. It's from many years ago. So if you want to put all those people in, it's a huge amount of funding effort from external parties. So it's just that we just happen to have a project now where the GGA has been able to get in for the Drought Resilience Adoption and Innovation Hub, and we've used that funding opportunity to really put things all in one place, because the interest in lupins for human food is a lot greater than it was even 12 months ago. So we're just capitalising on the added interest that's out there.
And I also read recently, is it true that WA currently grows about 85% of the world's production of lupins?
That's right. Narrow leaf lupins are our thing. We're the ones that have exported in bulk to international destinations where it's mainly been used in chicken feed, pigs feeding cattle. So it's always been a very useful animal feed, but the whole thing about capitalizing on its unique attributes as a human food has sort of just been just on the back burner. So yes, we're it for the world for narrow leaf lupins. And people might ask, you know, what is it about WA that makes growing narrow leaf lupins such a doable thing? And a couple of things. It's basically a Mediterranean crop. That's where it, or plant, that's where it originally came from. And we've got Mediterranean climate and we've got the soils. We've got a lot of sandy soils. And if you go to Europe and see where a lot of narrow leaf lupins do grow just naturally, it's the same sort of soils. So we've got a unique climate. We got the great soils. We got a farming system that fits lupins in most cases. So it's complementary to other crops and all this sustainable benefit you get, because obviously these lupins are a legume. They fix nitrogen. And so you're not so reliant on the nitrogen, which comes from artificial fertilizer. So all these things come together. So I think we can be proud that we've actually got this crop to where it is. And it's largely because of the innovation of Dr. John Gladstone's many, many years ago when he domesticated the wild lupins, and we have the crop that we grow now. So so it's all a big success story, but we just want to move the success onto this other level because we know that they're a good thing to have in people's diets.
Fantastic. And circling back to the website, what are some of the key features that viewers will find when they visit it?
Right. Well, it looks after people that are even in the lupin business, not just the consumer. So if people want to work out where lupins might fit in emerging for new types of products, they can use that information. If you're a consumer, you'll find out how it is a grain that has so little starch in it, which really differentiates it from a lot of the common grains that we have in our diets. So people that want high protein in their diet, low starch, and it's got the fiber content, and all that, those things are really important together, because people can get, you know, we all know about the sort of obesity problems and, well, what we call diabesity, so diabetes and obesity. It all helps to prevent that happening if they're a reasonable part of the diet, because it's substituting out some of the things that we all know do tend to make us a bit on the heavier side. And it also has this issue about, obviously, people's diets do benefit from higher fiber contents. So it's just brilliant. I mean, and in some respects, people could ask, this should have been promoted years ago. And so that's why we are tackling this with urgency. And the website's there for everyone to dig into. And there's lots of different areas they can go into and get information. There's recipes provided, and there'll be things added as time goes on. For the case studies from the lupin growers, that'll be coming on soon, so that people can find out how they fit in the farming system.
And Greg, what do you hope visitors to the website will learn or gain from their experience?
Well, I think they'll get up to speed with something that in the general world of consumer land is quite new. So if you just ask the average person on the street what they thought a lupin was, most people wouldn't have a clue. So the main thing is that general awareness raising, so that people can actually explore and work out how these things can fit into their diets, and the added information about how they're so useful in our farming system just gives people that surety that in a time where everyone's talking about carbon footprints, you know, and just to extend that point about this business about the nitrogen fixation, because you don't have to use so much nitrogen fertilizer in the crop that goes in the next year after growing lupins, then you're reducing your carbon footprint, because that artificial nitrogen fertilizer uses fossil fuels in its production. So you're just stopping that component happening. And so the more hectares of lupins go in because we've got this emerging market happening, then there's going to be less carbon footprint in that part of the farming system. So this is all the education people are going to get. They come onto the website because everything is pretty much there.
Thank you very much, Greg. Our listeners can visit aussielupins.org.au to explore the website. Now, we're also here with Deephead research scientist Kira Beard, who conducts extensive research in the lupins disease space. Kira, can you give us some insights into your current research project related to lupins sclerotinia?
Thanks, Cindy. Yeah, we're excited to be working in lupins because they're a vital break crop in the WA cropping programs. And lupins add diversity that is important for breaking cereal disease cycles and adding fixed nitrogen, like Greg mentioned. So unfortunately, though, lupins can get diseases of their own, and one of these is sclerotinia. So we currently have a four-year project that we're working on. It's a GRDC DPIRD co-investment, and Bingen Yuerwin Group, a farming group, and the Centre for Crop and Disease Management, we're all collaborating together to do some research into a disease that causes a stem rot in lupins. And so it can cause significant yield loss and has been quite a challenge in the last 2 years. Historically, it's been an issue in the Geraldton Port Zone, but with more canola being grown across WA, across the wheat belt, the disease is now found in many areas. So the growers were a big impetus in getting this project off the ground because there was a lot of interest from them about how the disease is causing yield impact. Can there be anything done to reduce that? And we also needed to start by looking into the distribution of the disease across WA, where it was causing yield impact, and understanding the infection process just to see if there's any way that we could interrupt it. So the project is encompassing quite a few collaborators, and we're investigating managing the disease via field surveys, controlled environment and lab experiments, and we're also doing field trials, and some growers are doing large-scale trials. So it's exciting to have those who are impacted by the disease actually a big part of doing the research with us.
Wow, it sounds like a very extensive project. What have been some of the notable highlights or findings from this research so far?
So, like I said, we're looking into the infection process in lupins, and it's quite different to what we would have seen in canola. So there's been a lot of work done on sclerotinia in canola, but in lupins it infects in a different way and the disease needs to be managed differently. So some of the work we're doing in the lab is looking at the germination of sclerotia, which initiate the disease process, and we're looking at how we can interrupt that to minimise yield losses in lupins. So that's quite interesting, looking at different methods that growers might be able to employ to interrupt that disease cycle. It's very difficult to control basal infection at ground level. So a lot of the research we're doing is looking into, is there anything that might be a possibility in terms of agronomic strategies that might reduce the disease in the lower canopy and in the soil. And then one of the key things we've found through our surveillance is that sclerotinia and lupin causes the greatest yield impact in the Geraldton Port Zone and the Kanana North Port Zone. And that's a lot to do with the weather, which is a lot warmer than the south, and the sclerotinia pathogen really likes weather that's more than 16 degrees. So during winter in these warmer climates, it's promoted by wet weather, humidity and temperatures above 16 degrees. So that's been a big finding and explains why we don't get too many reports from the south. Some other things that we've found is that foliar fungicide, as well as some other agronomic strategies, are showing great promise for managing the disease. And we've seen yield responses of 11% in some trials with foliar fungicides applied during crop flowering. And we're investigating other profitable ways of managing the disease that will target canopy infection and look at risk management, because the disease is carried over via sclerotia in the soil, and so it can be an ongoing issue for growers.
Well, they sound really fascinating findings, Kira. And you have touched on management briefly, but in what ways do you anticipate growers and consultants will be able to integrate your research findings in their lip and agronomy practices in the future?
Yeah, so we're excited. We've got one more year left of the project after this year, so we're excited to try all the different potential strategies in a few trials that we're going to be setting up so that growers can see in person the best practice management that we're thinking of proposing for lupin sclerotinia in different regions. So that's going to be including foliar fungicide chemical strategies as well as some agronomic strategies. So things like row spacing, reducing plant density, so lower seeding rates, possibly later sowing time if it's agronomic. Yeah, and some different foliar fungicide strategies that are likely to be showing promise that we've tried in trials to date. So they're all looking like they great potential for growers to use to manage this disease and reduce the yield losses it causes.
Great. I look forward to hearing more about those findings as the project continues. And Kira, do you see any exciting developments on the horizon in the field of lupin disease research?
So as well as our lupin sclerotinia research, I know that there are other projects that DPIRD are involved in this field of lupins. So there's a collaboration between DPIRD, Murdoch Uni, Curtin Uni and AGT, which is looking at improving disease resistance of narrow leaf lupin. So it's looking at four diseases and screening them and looking for ways of improving genetic resistance to sclerotinia, phomopsis, cucumber mosaic virus and anthracnose. So that's exciting from the point of view that the information that is produced that will be shared with pre-breeders and breeders to potentially produce lupin varieties in the future that have more resistance to diseases like sclerotinia. Then there's also the WA Farming Systems Project, which is a GRDC co-investment with DPIRD, and that one is researching early sowing opportunities for break crops, which includes lupins. So they're looking at things like the most appropriate varieties and the best bet agronomy to achieve yield and profit when you sow lupins early. So they're looking at water use efficiency and ways of reducing risk, and yeah, I think that's exciting promise for all this extra research in lupins.
Excellent. And Greg, do you see any exciting developments or have you heard of anything in the pipeline in regards to lupin food research?
Well, I think the emerging work, which has actually started with our European friends, our scientists in Europe, where they're looking at how you can get lupins to taste better in terms of they can sometimes be a bit beany in their taste. So we've got a bit of an angle on what could be done to reduce that problem. And we have a student at Curtin University who's doing a PhD, and the aim is to look at these off flavours and just see, you know, how we can sort of minimise their occurrence. So it becomes more appealing for consumers. Our whole aim is that people have lupins in their diet and they don't feel as though they're eating health food. You know, they're not, you know, like some people like to include certain types of things in the food. Sometimes they, you know, they're not that appealing, but we can work on that because we know what the cause of that taste is. So that's just some of the work that's ongoing. And we have obviously applications at GRDC to do further work in the area.
Kira and Greg, thank you very much for coming on the podcast and sharing your valuable insights into the new Aussie Lupins website and DPIRD lupin disease research. It's been a pleasure having you both on the podcast.
Thanks, Cindy, for the opportunity.
Thanks very much. Great.
More information on this topic can be found in the show notes. If you like this episode, you can download and subscribe to Grains Convo on Apple Podcasts and Spotify.
We'll be back on the 1st and 15th of every month with a new episode. Thanks for listening.